if you think about it, a business is an other, right? Like as a lawyer, you're taught a business is a separate entity or individual under the law. And so if you think about it, they're starting to think about themselves as separate from the business a little bit and starting to think, what does the business need and what do other people need? And that's kind of why you're seeing this younger generation being a little bit more pro or apt to lean into this uncertainty a little more.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Exit Is Now podcast with me, your host, Scott Snyder, hanging out with my buddy Dan. We just got reacquainted, man. You know, we spent the last couple days together, but for our audience that are certified exit planning advisors, you might have seen Dan. What was that? Probably 2017?
Or 18.
Like 2018. 17.
I think it was 17.
He was a keynote speaker at the Exit Planning Summit, something that you'll see again coming up here in April.
We'll have
Dan back on the main stage at the Exit Planning Summit. And one of the reasons I wanted him there at the summit and then here on the podcast, because we got a lot of stuff to talk about from culture to different generations. And we see it inside of the exit planning space more so than ever. And I'm so excited to have you in April, because what's cool about Dan is he saw EPI when it was small. Now you get to see it with like nearly 1,000 people at our conference. Isn't that going to be wild?
It's really cool, fun, good energy.
Well, thanks for flying into cold Cleveland from San Diego, California. But more formally, Dan is an author of Chasing Relevance, a very interesting book. If you haven't seen it, back in 2018,
I think it's from 2016.
2016? Yeah, 2016. So it's a while now, but if you think about it, when you wrote this book, you were probably on that speaking circuit with the book now and all that at our conference. It was only 2 years old if you spoke in 2018.
Yeah, it was a little bit different then.
So I say that like Dan is like a generational expert. He studies the generations. He's a culture builder. Formerly, outside of being an author, founder of Launchbox.
I had some business as well. I actually worked in a family business, a big one. We grew it to $1 billion. And then in some tech businesses.
And an attorney by trade.
Attorney as well.
Did you practice? So you came out
7 years at a really big firm.
So let's start there. You want to start with, you don't like starting with the attorney? I think that it's interesting, right? Because I don't think you're your typical attorney, right? I think that you're probably happier doing what you're doing now than you were when you were practicing law.
Most attorneys that don't practice law are. I mean, they're the few and far between some litigators that really, really love what they do. But you're working by the hour, and you're servicing clients. I mean, it can be fun, and it's certainly stimulating. And I worked at a really big firm on really big deals. But I love law school, and I love what it taught me, which was how to think.
Yes.
Like how to analyze challenges to bridge people.
Yeah, exactly. My sister's an attorney, and my grandfather was one too. So we got a lot of attorneys over in the Snyder family. So 2014, you start the business that you're in today. 2014-ish?
It was 2014, 2015. Yep. We created a consulting business, and then we had this brainstorm of an idea. My kids were getting a little bit older and kind of trying to find their way into the work world.
Yep.
And there was just such a huge disconnect. And so we said, how can we help there? Like, how can we help the kids get great jobs and share their value and articulate their value? And how can we tell the old kind of curmudgeons. Can I curse here?
No. Paige just doesn't really like the F word. Our producer, Paige, if you know
how
her.
How can we tell the old F-bombs that, you know, it's different and they got to come to the table? You know, you have direct experience of
That's what I'm saying. We go down a whole rabbit hole here. We had in 2000, well, my dad's a boomer, 65-year-old.
Me too?
Yeah. You are boomer?
Yes.
I want whatever genes you have, Dan, I need them. It's probably all that great working out that you do.
A little bit of sun, a little bit of ocean water.
Yeah.
And genetics, bro.
Genetics? Sorry. Yeah, I'm screwed. Damn it. So my dad's a baby boomer, and I would say, if you're a baby boomer, you don't fit that generation.
First year, I'm trying, bro. I also think that generation and age, they're a mindset.
And, oh, that's fair.
And so everyone within, not everyone within the generation,
yeah,
is old school. Although you did grow up at a certain time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like wearing too tight jeans and lots of beads. I'm not wearing them today. Yeah. And yeah, you know, dropping the F-bomb and yeah, trying everything that's new and interesting, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so a little bit untraditional for you, but and I think with me and my dad, the 60-hour work week, this relinquishing of control that we've done at EPI, yeah, over the last 3 or 4 years, navigating our pandemic together. And then what hit me about jumping into that story was in 2020, when we were navigating this pandemic, Dad has kind of come through it now, but yeah, there are times
we seem very happy about it. Yes,
he is very proud. We've taken actually a lot from Dad too, because the boomers like you guys have this really unique ability to handle crisis throughout your career, right? So when we hit the pandemic, looking to Dad and his experiences in navigating companies was critical. But one thing that Dad, I think, in 2020 was struggling with was, he's surrounded by a bunch of people that are in their 20s, yeah, and early 30s. The average age of our leadership team today is 31 and a half years old. The oldest guy in the company today is only 45 years old if you take away Dad, right?
Right.
And so we're different, a lot different. And I think that we want different things out of the workplace, and the way we function and think is different. And Dad was struggling with, he always used to say, like, maybe you need to add a gray-haired effect to the leadership team. I'm like, that's really not my style right now, Dad.
Well, the testimony to the success that you've had, I think, is that you live the ultimate saying, which is where youth and experience meet, that's where, yes, magic happens. And so you guys have really tapped into figure out where youth and experience meet and to create that magic. And yeah, so you may not have someone sitting here with you every day that's a boomer, but you have advisors, you have mentors, that's you true, have access to those people, and you know when you need that. Mm-hmm. And so that combination, you've been able to do a really, really good job with that equation. And that's what's necessary of all businesses, mm-hmm, to move into the future. And that is what was necessary in writing the book, to kind of pivot back to there,
yeah, right,
which is, how do we bridge that gap? And mm-hmm, how do we make that equation work? Because we know it will work. We've been complaining about it since the beginning of time. Socrates and Plato, I think there's a quote in the book.
Yeah.
One complaining about the other, didn't, you know, do his homework, didn't respect his teachers, ate with his mouth full, all the things that we still complain about 4,000 years later. But yeah, the truth is, the reason we prevail as a society is because where youth and experience meet is where magic happens.
Yeah, there's a quote or a saying in the back of the book about fixing millennials, right? Yeah. So it's been a few years since, yeah, you wrote the book,
yeah,
and the millennials are now older. Like, I'm a cusper, right?
Yeah.
I'm like an old millennial,
yeah, no, I
going
think,
into Gen
Josh, who was here the other day, is 41. So I think, yep, 1981 is the first year of millennials, or
yeah,
1980.
Yeah.
So they're 41, 42, yeah, 43
like
years
us,
old,
yeah,
already. And so now there's Generation Z, which starts at about now. They're probably at about 26,
yeah,
and younger. And then probably the 17-year-olds or 16, 15-year-olds, they're Gen Alpha is what they're calling them.
Yeah, I know. We got to get into that, too.
Yeah,
I told,
yeah,
you when,
yeah,
I was talking to kind of yesterday, too, I don't have enough data points on them yet because they're pretty young, right? They're
I don't 12. Think anyone does.
Yeah, you don't, yeah, know. Yeah, yeah, right? There's
no,
not
I mean,
a lot of...
we kind of understand how it's coming and shaping. What do you think is the biggest reshaping or reframing of each of the generations, especially since millennials? What's, yeah, the biggest factor?
The biggest factor in reshaping them?
Yeah.
Was it a pandemic or no?
Well, the pandemic certainly, but technology,
well,
right?
Technology,
and then the pandemic kind of amplified much of how we work,
yeah,
like, you know, hybrid workplaces, like you said you have here.
Yeah, so do you think that's had a big effect on work?
Oh, yeah.
Because you do a lot of talent management,
yeah,
workforce management,
yeah, yeah,
engagement. That had to be kind of a curveball for you guys.
Oh, my God, yes. Well, the good news is, look, we've known the secrets to success in leadership training,
yeah,
and you've seen all the people that you use, all the people that your membership uses,
yeah,
and advisors call on. You know, we've known this stuff that, you know, paying attention to people, asking them what they need, getting systems developed where we're all engaged, that stuff works. Working from strengths or DISC or whatever the assessment is, all that's worked. And we've known that for 40, 50, 60 years, the psychology of it.
Yeah.
We just haven't eaten our own dog food. And I think what the pandemic, yeah, said was, whoa, employees are not going to take it anymore. So you better give them something different, or they'll leave you, and they're not so scared of leaving you because we had the pandemic and WTF, We had to figure it out, and everyone figured it out. So that was the big thing, is really pushing on everyone individually to meet them where they are personally and having them figure out what they want to do and not being afraid to practice that. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a cool thing because it pushes boomers and it pushes us old codgers, if you will, that we need to be better and we need to really, you know, it's not about fixing millennials. It's about connecting not only with millennials, but right, race, gender, these things that we have issues with. That's our own shit. How do we get out of the way of it and really talk to each other? And it's not our job to fix people. It's our job to collaborate and listen and set expectations and, like grown ass adults, be able to say, that won't work for me, that will work for me. Right. Here's what worked. Here are the values of our company. And we're going to do that together, right?
Yeah, I think that when you read your stuff and your approach to all of this and in connecting the generations and working to better together, it's really about relationship building, communication. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, what are the keys? How do you understand? So you take somebody like my dad, who in 2020, boomer kind of mindset, now we have to go work virtually. Like, oh, man, like no one's going to work when they go home, right? They're just going to be messing around,
which they actually worked more, right?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying.
More effective and efficient.
So if my dad was sitting here and he was struggling, if you were here with us in 2020 and struggling to connect to the next generation of leaders here at his own company, what are some of the keys to success? Like, when you go in and start to analyze that, what are you looking at?
Well, I think what happened during COVID is we were forced to understand that the technology actually really works to allow us to be able to work everywhere. Yeah. And so I don't really think we believed it. And especially if we're an old school person like me, I started my law career, there was no email. I mean, that's how old I am, right? And so there was no email. I didn't have Slack. I didn't have, you know, Instagram and Snapchat and every other thing available. And so it just was different. And so we believed our belief system, right? We had to bust all these myths, which is part of our system, to say, can it be done differently? And will it work? And we saw pretty quickly that it would. And I think the biggest thing that stood in the way of your dad pre-2020 was they were not forced to see that look at that. Yeah. And then the other thing, which I've had a couple of conversations since I've been here about, is really hard to give up control and shift your 100%. Mindset and do those things. And so I think your membership has to really focus on that, not only for their own businesses, like you describe your thing, which is a really cool example, but we have other consultants we're working with that are facing the same thing, you know, whether it's in law, whether it's in exit planning, whether it's in accounting, whether it's a regular business. And then they have to be able to bridge that also for their clients who are in all these family-owned businesses or small businesses. We're going to have the largest transfer of wealth ever from one generation to other, trillions of dollars. And so we gotta figure out, right? It's like we can't whine anymore. Why can't we just get along? We have to figure out what are the tools to do it. So your question was, what are the tools to do it? And I think is you have to understand that the most important thing you can build in any business is a relationship. Because what's the most important life work skill? If you ask yourself, what's the most, it's building relationships, period.
Right.
Whether it's in life or whether it's at work. And so if you distill it down to its purest and most simple form, and you really get people engaged in having a conversation. And, you know, part of being a lawyer, kind of this helps me in being a coach, is I just ask really hard questions.
Yeah. Right? I think you're described by some I saw as one of the most caring yet direct people people have ever met. And I would say, too, we were hanging out yesterday with Dan, and he can remember everybody's name and within minutes. And it's just like, in doing that, though, this caring thing, this relationship building starts to come out in you. You just feel like,
I love people. I mean, I really love people. Yeah. Maybe I'm from New York and I just love knowing about their business, but I just love learning and really understanding. And it's, you know, it's just who I am is to want to help people be better. And so I'm not the type of guy at a cocktail party that can talk about the weather. I want to talk about what are the hardest things that you encountered and how the hell can we help you fix them?
Yeah.
Right. Like, and what should you be thinking about? And, you know, it's a strength and to some people, it's a huge turnoff, right? You got to know your audience.
Yeah. Well, you got to know your audience. I can see how sometimes people are like, whoa, this guy's really asking some tough questions.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Turn it down.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you're looking at the next generation, so we've just done a large state of owner readiness survey, understanding business owners and how ready they are to transition, how attractive their companies are and all that stuff that we talk about here in the EPI world. One of the biggest shifts that I've seen post-pandemic is we used to talk about 60% of the privately held companies were owned by baby boomers.
Right.
That's down to 51%.
Wow.
And obviously rising up is the people basically top end of the millennials
right. And
through Generation X, these folks that are 36 years old up to 57 or so years old, own 43% of the market now. So definitely starting to turn. In studying those next generations of owners or business leaders or employees, what are some of the key things that they need to be successful in their careers in business? So for example, I think they're actually prime time for exit planning because I think that folks in their 40s, 50s are very in tune to wanting a work-life balance and blend.
Yeah, I mean, so work-life balance became a thing probably when they were growing up. Xers. Yeah. How do we create a world? Yeah. And so I think they're in tune to transition. And so I think, will they be better than boomers? Yes, but they still have their stick and their stuff and their preconceived notions. Mm. But with technology and with, information, access to information, right? Yeah. Even the relationship with information, if you think about that as a skill, is really created more of a desire to want to learn and be better. And I think also the world, as tough as it is out there in politics and a lot of other things, COVID also helped us with purpose and mission and people really wanting to give back. So there's a little softer side of people were saying, it's not just all about money. And so I think all those things working together make it easier for people to think about others. And if you think about it, a business is an other, right? Like as a lawyer, you're taught a business is a separate entity or individual under the law. And so if you think about it, they're starting to think about themselves as separate from the business a little bit and starting to think, what does the business need and what do other people need? And that's kind of why you're seeing this younger generation being a little bit more pro or apt to lean into this uncertainty a little more.
Yeah, I never thought about it like that, but I do. I would, even in my own business and with our own team in the pandemic, focus us more on our relationship with each other and caring more about others. It's just spot on.
So the thing about building relationships, the way I look at it and the way our system looks at it when we teach it is there's an individual component that you need to own, right?
Yeah.
For yourself. Because you have to change your mindset, you have to change who you're going to be, you have to change the way you present, you have to understand your audience. And then there's this huge other component. And to us, self plus others equals results. Because as Zig Ziglar said, I think he said, right, you can have anything you want in life if you just give others what they need. And I think that is the secret really to this mess that we call not being able to get along from the generations for years and years and years is we're just in our own shit.
Yeah.
And we just completely focused on ourselves. And it's survival as humans, right? Like I have friends, I have family, they always lead with themselves. And when you can switch it to how do I lead with others? And that probably was even in your own personal experience with your dad is when he made that break, right? It's the break that when you can focus on the others, the control starts to go away. It's like, okay, I got to teach the others. So if there's some things I wouldn't do my way, it's okay because they got to learn.
Yeah.
Right? And then it eradicates control.
I'm having like an aha moment though because it was so true. Once me and Dad, even in our own relationships, stopped trying to fix each other.
Right.
Like, Dad, you just don't understand me. Come my way. Let me fix you and maybe make you more millennial.
Right.
Or Scott, let me make you more boomer. And we just started to better understand each other.
Ask questions. Yeah, yeah.
It really changed who Dad and I were as father, son, and as business partners. Yeah. And that kind of bled, I'd like to think, kind of bled through the organization where we all started asking more questions and caring.
And then asking questions of yourself is the ultimate, right? Yes, like, is how do I want to show up? How do I want to be? How do I want to come across? What do I want my brand to be? What value do I want my company to bring? What type of relationships do I want to have with the people that I work with? And you have all those things going on here, which is such a unique thing to watch it work well.
Right? Yeah.
Because I get to go to a lot of places.
You do.
And most of them, not so much.
Yeah. Right? Well, we practice a lot too, yeah. right? So yeah. from our mentors mm-hmm. and our coaches, from whether it's you or mm-hmm. and anybody else that has really spent some time with us over the last 3 years, it's not by accident, right? Like, you get in there and it's got to be top of mind. Because I could tell you, when you first met me, 2018 or whatever mm-hmm. It was not like this here.
Yeah.
It was not. It was not. Relationship building.
What do you think changed?
Oh man, what a loaded. It's just,
sorry. Am I doing the interview?
Yeah, no. Here? I like. Yeah. It's one of the coolest things about guests when they actually flip the script a little bit. But man, there was a lot of stuff. I think that, I was so concentrated on the destination that it was almost like at the sacrifice of everybody else. Right. Like, we just had to get to that goal.
That's called youth, right?
Yeah. I wasn't. As much as I'd like to think that I was a people person and I was a relationship builder, looking at who I am and how I am today, I don't think I really was. I was very militant in my leadership skills.
Well, I'm sure you were, right? Yeah. I think what I sense from you in the years is an intentionality.
Yes.
Right? And it's about really carving out that intentionality on a daily basis and saying, I'm going to be more intentional and I'm going to learn every day how to be more intentional to meet everyone where they need to be, right?
Yeah.
Personally, whether it's a client, whether it's a friend, whether it's a coworker, all those things.
Yeah. In my style, I was saying it was almost like militant, right? So I for 10 years prior to doing what we're doing today, I owned a landscaping company. And with those guys, and maybe if I challenged my leadership skills back then, it maybe better, but they almost needed that structure, right? Like, there was a foreman, there's a sub-foreman, and it was very direct and order. Then when I got into this business, I knew that leadership style. So then I started using that leadership style here. And honestly, a lot of coaching from my father as well in big corporate America, a lot of boomers, right? And people like Colleen and Paige that are over here producing the podcast right now, they don't want to be led like that. Yeah. They don't want to just be told what to do every day and have no relationship. Like, Paige and I, 3 or 4 years ago, had no relationship. I think if Paige was sitting in this chair, she would say, I was kind of scared of Scott, right? And so now...
She's not anymore.
I don't think she's nodding her head back
we
there.
Should
I don't,
ask her.
I don't think she is anymore. In fact, she's actually one of my most, if not the most trusted advisor to me today.
Yeah.
But it was that change where you just talked about having access to information.
Yeah.
Like, they can just Google something now.
Yeah.
Like, so leadership has completely changed.
Yeah, leadership. And we kind of talk about these three hacks because you asked for what's a morsel or a tip that you could give people. And the first one is you got to turn your perspective upside down, which is that other focus, and figure out what do they need from me. So, for example, I had a big consultant that works at a firm where there are 28,000 employees and said, you're really good at this keynote stuff and this workshop stuff. Could you tell me how to do a workshop for them?
Yeah.
And I said, well, what do your people need from you?
Right.
And her response was this to me is, well, I want them to. I was like move to strike. I wasn't a litigator, but move to strike completely non-responsive. I didn't ask you what you want from them.
Yeah.
I asked you what they need from you.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Very different
Very
question.
Different.
And so it's like, how do we change that around and figure that out, right, to understand each other so we can work together? That's number one. Number two hack is there's got to be more meaning and purpose around it. Simon Sinek, what's my why?
Yeah.
Especially after COVID, what's the meaning? What's the purpose behind these things? And what drives me? And you got to understand those for each of the people on your team. Viktor Frankl, it goes back to logotherapy. Mm. And then the third thing is, how do we reskill and how do we coach people? Mm. Because AI's coming, things are changing, the train has left the station, it's a supersonic, Japanese quick train.
Yeah.
And we got to figure out how to reskill people or how to skill them, because they may not understand how to build a relationship or how to do a sales call or how to ask a question. And so If you can focus on those three hacks, you really can design something special. And that's not necessarily generational. It's humanness, right?
It is humanness. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely humanness.
Which is a word, because I've looked it up because I like it so much.
Yeah, actually, I want to get into some of these. I think if you go, you should visit Dan's stuff. If you go to Dan's website, I think there's a tab on there that's called Danisms.
Oh, yeah.
That's, you have like a bunch of Danisms in there, right? And so
we'll give them a bunch on the podcast.
Yeah. So I want to dive into some of those after a quick break. So just stick with us for 2 minutes. We'll be right back.
For business owners, by a business owner. Walking to Destiny is your essential resource for understanding what makes your business highly profitable and significant. It becomes a business owner's handbook to know how to rapidly grow value and ultimately unlock the personal wealth trapped in business. Exit Planning Institute CEO Christopher Snyder demonstrates how strategic exit planning will help you achieve improvements today while positioning you to build wealth for generations. Secure your success along other value creators. Discover, prepare, and decide what your walk to destiny will ultimately be. If executed correctly, these strategies can grow a business owner's wealth by 10 times. Walking to Destiny, the second edition, the 11 actions an owner must take to rapidly grow value and unlock wealth. Get your copy today at www.walkingtodestiny.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Exit Is Now podcast, hanging out with Dan, talking about generations, workforce engagement, and a little bit about the EPI story as well. So I told you before the break, if you go visit Dan's website, he's got these hacks around. Those hacks are on there.
I think on one of the websites, I think that the hacks are on the Launchbox website.
Yeah, the Launchbox. Yeah. And these Danisms.
Danisms are on the dan.negroni, which is my speaking website.
Yeah, your speaking website. Yeah, so check it out. Danisms.com. So there's a couple of things that when I was reading that kind of stood out to me, and you alluded to one of them. You talked about creating your personal brand stamp.
Yeah.
This is kind of maybe where this all kind of kickstarts. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, and look, none of the stuff I talk about is new. They've been around, right? I read 2 books a week. That's another great thing that people should do, or listen to 2 books a week on fast.
Yeah.
Cause I'm from New York, so I could take it, but, you got to really learn. And so brand stamp to me is trying to figure out who you are. And we did an exercise when we started our business, what we're going to be the brand of the business. And so I got 40 of my advisors, friends, mentors that I'd worked with in the past, and we got in a room and they had to write a whole bunch of words that described me, and getting out the not nice ones or the curse words or things like that. They came up with three, and the three words they came up with were giving, direct, and inspiring. And I was asked to write my three words before. And my words were generous, giving, bold, direct, and empowering, inspiring. Because I think empowering is a little bit more. So, yeah, that's cool. When the world sees you as you see yourself, you're doing something right. I'm not saying you're perfect, but you're doing something right. And so one of the things I do is I'm not wearing it today, but I have a bracelet with like three little things that say those words.
Oh,
and
cool.
So, right, when you're bold, you have to really be able to know how well to be generous at the same time and how to make sure that it's empowering and not at the expense of someone, but for them, for the benefit of them. And so I think we do that exercise with people and individuals so they can get a sense of themselves, figure out their why, figure out their story so they can articulate their value. Because if you cannot articulate your value to someone, you're in trouble, right?
Yeah.
I mean, look at all these advisors. They should really understand what's their superpower, what's their story. And so I think that's just one of the tools, this brand stamp, if you will, about who and it also makes you hold yourself to those words and to be accountable to yourself as, you know, as a friend, as a spouse, as a parent, as a speaker. And so it really helps with humility.
I would say when you asked that earlier question before the break about kind of what changed for us too, it was a very hard inward look at myself to find also like not just the words that describe me, but personal purpose. Like I never had that. I never really investigated that. And we had to do this exercise during that time. And I ended up going to a cabin at a lake down in southern Ohio by myself. And I'm a pretty extroverted guy. Right. So like sitting by myself for 2 days, sitting by myself for 2 days is not really something that's enjoyable. In fact, it's actually kind of freaky for me. But I forced myself to stop and think, kind of like that, the three words that would describe me, or what am I really here to do? Mm-hmm. And finding that personal brand, that kind of
what'd you come up stamp. With?
So I'm here to drive experiences. Uh-huh. I love, that's probably some of the work that, one of the reasons I like the work that we do is that I'd like to think that by empowering the SEPAs, not only are we giving them a transformation in their career, but then they're transforming a business owner's life. It could be like the Cavs game that we went to the other night, right? Mm-hmm. I love creating that experience and bringing people together and seeing people have fun. And then I'm obviously having fun in there with you guys. And so... Right. Or maybe it's empowering somebody, like going back, not to, you have Paige as our subject here, but helping Paige go from marketing intern to director of marketing in a matter of a four or 5 year run. Like those things for me are super, but finding that.
Yeah, it's about critical. It's more than driving experiences, if I might. Permission to reframe a little bit. I think it's about empowering growth. And growth in humans. And okay, there you go.
All right, that's one.
A little consulting nugget.
A little nugget.
It really is about empowering growth. And one of the ways you empower growth is through connection, right? And that's why you love the experience, because you're connecting people through the experience. But really what you're doing in the experience is you're making 2 + 2 = 100, because you had all these people together and you put them together and you hope that they come away with something that, right? I met Josh.
I met Sam.
I met Carrie. I mean, I had a lot of amazing experiences that you did by empowering that growth. You can call it driving experiences. Mm. I think it's a little bit deeper about what you're doing for people.
Yeah. So another one on the thing on your website that kind of stood out to me too was talk a lot about a modernized organization.
Yeah.
So what does that look like for you in today's world?
I think it looks like whatever you need it to look like for your organization, which is what it doesn't. I mean, look, you have to have a system, right? Like you have to have some system. And you have to be true to the system. This system thinking from Buckminster Fuller, right, from years and years and years ago in the 50s, I think it was. So you got to have system. But what your organization looks like, you have to really do the three hacks, which is, right?
Right.
What does everyone need from this? What do we want to be? What's our meaning and purpose and drive? And what are we trying to accomplish? What's our story and superpower to create and empower growth or whatever value we're bringing to others? And then the third thing is what are the skills that we need to do it? And how are we going to make sure that we can actually effectuate them? Hmm. Right. So it's within those three things. I think sales organizations need a little bit different flavors to those things, but you just need to kind of systematize it in a way, and you have to be open, honest, authentic, and transparent about it and distill it down to, like you guys have, to something really simple and live to it, like the way you did your drive to your own goals.
Yes.
Like the way you have everyone talk to each other, like the way you inspire them or empower them to talk to your clients to give value. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know that there's a simple answer to that question.
Yeah.
But there's a simple way to get there.
Simple way to get there.
Do you understand what I
mean? Yeah, no, I understand. I understand exactly.
And everyone's different, right? Just like the Peloton teacher, I use this example because I love it. They're talking to 1 million people, but they're hitting everyone else where that person needs to be hit. And I'm motivated to go harder differently than you're motivated to harder.
Yeah.
And so how do I, right? So same thing with your company.
Yeah, I totally agree.
You got all these different individuals, so you got to figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah, so the other thing I find difficult in our business, and it'd be interesting as an example across all the clients that you're working with, how do you start to kind of maintain and grow that culture in a more virtual world? So I struggle with this, right? When we came back post-pandemic, when we were allowed to come back in the office, we came back hardcore five days a week again, right? And people were so adjusted to
the other way.
And the challenge back for my leadership team, Dan, was, dude, we're hitting all our goals and then some. So, Sky, you got to...
What's wrong with you, bro?
Yeah, what's lighten
up? Yeah, yeah.
They're like, you're so old school. And I'm like, I feel like a young guy. Well, but maintaining that culture.
Right, so you ask them, why do you want this and why do you need it? Mm-hmm. And their answer to you was, right, that's the first hack, was, I love the flexibility with my life and it allows me to feel to relax better, to work harder, to produce more, to do all those things. And so 5 days is probably not realistic anymore, but I still need to be with people. I want to grow. I want to learn. I understand part of our business is being together. So how do we figure that out? And so it's right. It's iterative.
It happens
over time, and lots of events can change that, from a storm that, you know, shuts you down for a week, to air traffic control problems, to weather, to all, you know, to all those things. And so I just think you got to really always be, you know, doing I call them drive-bys, which is probably not politically correct at all.
Not anymore.
But like our check-ins, you're checking in with people. And I think virtual gives you more flexibility, not less. It allows you to save money on some things. It allows you to connect and feel closer to people. It allows you to do some digital or online content. The answer is, it takes a lot of work. And anything that's good takes a lot of work, and it's hard work. And as long as your people are engaged, they're going to find the solutions of how to do the work better.
Yeah. The other thing is, for me and my in the business today, you might have heard me talking about this last night a little bit too, is scaling that culture now that we've built. So I think we got a good thing now, right? And my biggest struggle right now over the last 18 months is relinquishing control. And empowering my leadership team. Like, I'm not even hiring anybody anymore, which is like a very weird thing, I'll tell you too. I was sitting in my, well, I actually came into the office. We had a new guy, Ron. I told Ron the story the other day, and Ron is one of our business development managers. And he was sitting there, and it was the first time this has ever happened in my life. He was sitting there as the brand new guy on day one, and I had come in at like 10 a.m., and they were already doing some training. And when he turned, He was like, oh, and he like sat up straighter and then got up and shook my hand. And it was super weird because I hadn't met him ever, right? Jesse hired on to Jesse's team. And for me, it's kind of weird being like, that's the owner. That's the president of the company. And I'm like, I'm just a regular guy, right? But now what I think our challenge is over the next 3 years, we're going to go from 30 people to about 55 people. Is how do I continue to scale and grow and instill the stuff that we've created to the 55th employee?
Yeah. So the first part of the answer is diligently, and second part is carefully.
Right? Yeah.
And then I think the third part is, how do you get Colleen and Paige and you know, John and Matt and Jesse,
all the
and
names all, that right, you remember,
all the names that I remember, right? And Jenna and how do you get them to be able to be that bridge for you when you're not here? And how do you get them to infuse that culture? And for each of those people, it's going to be different. But I would say the most important, what do you think is the most important thing about that kind of presupposition of getting, hiring all those people? What's the thing you need to do best?
Well, I think hiring the right people right out of the
gate. That's the right answer. Yeah. And so how do you do that?
Today, it was interesting to see they actually use the core values that we've created.
Yeah, I love that.
Right, so right, kind of right
you
out
point
of the gate.
To, hey, these are the behaviors, right? These are the values. These are the behaviors that are going to drive our business. And do you have these? Because if you don't, right, like door, exit, exit sign, right? Exit, see that exit? Door. That's meant for you.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right. So I just think hiring, right, is really, really critical. So getting more people involved in the process of hiring, really figuring out what works for people, maybe doing even an assessment, depending on a role. Yep. Do you do a DISC, not to figure out, are they a high D, but to figure out what questions you should be asking them, understanding that they're a high D in the DISC, to know if they're going to fit within your culture. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah,
or to do strengths. So it gives you more clarity of being a better employer and hirer of people. And so you got to really, really like be really careful with that. You said when you had your transition here, you had to get rid of or you had to, let's be more polite about it.
Yeah.
Certain people had to exit stage right to make room for the ability to make the change in the behaviors that you thought were necessary to grow the group that you have here. And I love that. And so you got scaling is about making sure you got the right people on the bus, which we never spend enough time doing.
Yeah, I could tell you too, that's another significant switch in the way in which we hire and onboard. Yeah. And to your point, we're way more intentional in those first couple of interviews than we ever been before. You might go through like three or four interviews now to make sure that we got that right fit. So when you walk in, we're all successful, right? You're going to be happy. I'm happy.
What do you think is the most important thing for that fit?
Oh,
not to my boy. I'm going to put you on the spot time after time.
So I think they're... I think the most important for that fit, I would just lean back onto the core values.
The values, sir.
You have to believe in those things. If you don't,
yeah,
so, and not in a business, but like in life.
So what I would say is, right, in addition to the values, it's mindset, right? The most
important. Yeah.
The overall mindset, one, to adapt to and agree with the behaviors, but also to learn, to grow, right? To have a growth mindset, to fail hard, to drive hard, to be able to take feedback, to be able to ask and focus on asking great questions. I was talking to your sales guys last night. Here's a little crystal that we were talking about. I said, you know, there are really two things you need to focus on when you're a salesperson. And if you can focus on these generally, they're easy to remember, then you can do the tools. And number one is being interested. And so we know that no one gives a crap about us. They give a crap about the value you can bring to them, right? What's your story to make them survive and thrive? And so you need to be interested. And so you got to ask all the questions to understand the person. And the other thing is you need to be interesting, but not interesting that you're cool and you know how to be an old car sales guy, which I did for years as well. Slap them on the back, make a friend, get the mama to trust you, so on and so forth. You need to be interesting in being able to really listen so hard in this world about what their needs are and to be able to paint that picture for them personally. About how you're going to solve their problem because they're a unique individual, right? So that's the interesting part. And so I think we get confused, especially as salespeople that don't go deeper, which is, we were talking about AI last night.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, well, AI, that's going to get rid of my job.
Yeah.
Well, no, because your job is to be able to describe what's coming in the future and be able to teach them how to use AI and show them that that is also part of your value, the interesting. And so I turned it around, of course, and said,
of course,
what type of questions would you ask
to
the person they were explaining that had a call at a particular time, 4 o'clock, what would you ask that person? And they're like, bah. Ask me that.
Right.
That's what we're looking to do with our salespeople. So, right, are they interested and can they be interesting? So what are their follow-up? What's their first question? But after I gave them the answer, what's their second question?
Yeah.
Because that showed, right? So I've been doing that with you a lot, kind of playing the game, which is I ask the first question, but then I go into this, right, which is where the meat is. So how do we get people that can live that?
I started reading this book that was recommended by one of our SEPAs, and so the book literally was called You're Not Listening. And it talks it kind of talks about what we're referring to today. I'm wondering, if do you see any troubles with the next generation, since we're like, you know, what we hear with our kids, right? You're just tied to a screen. And you're not listening.
You're not
asking questions. Like, you might be listening, but it's like right through. So do you think the generations and the use of technology that we have today have they lost having conversations? Because they don't have the deep ones anymore.
Yeah, there are a whole bunch of things that have gone on to really impede human connection, which is the most important thing. One is screen time, one is technology, you know, which is good, but it can, right? Everything has, the biggest strength is the biggest weakness. So I think that's a big problem. I think COVID, the lack of being with people, I don't think we've even grieved the loss that we really had doing things differently and understanding how different they are and how much we really do need people. And need, like, my second son, my youngest son just started working and he's never been to the office. Like, he's never been to their office. He's remote and he's in sales and he dials, makes 100 calls a day, but he's never been to the office. And that's strange as heck if you're trying to build a team and an engagement and have contests, all the things you talk about. So, I do think, and I think, you know, we're going to have to learn how to adapt more to use the technology that we have in a way. But the humanness is never going away. So that's when I train and when I go into a business and when I coach, I'm really, really hyper-focused on how do we give the skills to do the listening, to do the question asking, to be able to provide the value? Does that make sense?
Absolutely makes sense. So I need to take a quick break. So we'll be right back. I want to talk to you about Gen Z and Gen Alpha. I was like alluding to this last night a little bit because the one that's the two that I know the least.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to you about that next. Yeah. We'll be right back.
The Exit Planning Institute is the authority in exit planning. With its award-winning process, the Value Acceleration Methodology provides deep insights into how to help business owners create more significant companies while blending and aligning their business, personal, and financial goals. EPI brings together the world's most elite exit planning advisors to form the EPI community. The EPI community represents over 15,000 professional advisors worldwide, including its 5,000 certified exit planning advisors. These advisors include financial advisors, growth consultants, CPAs, attorneys, M&A advisors, amongst others, who come together to expand their knowledge, create and innovate, network and relationship build, grow their practices, and better attract and engage business owner clients. Join EPI today and gain access to the community, content, courses, credential, and conference that you as the professional advisor need in order to harness the opportunity with small to lower middle market business owners who strive to grow a company of significance, thus having a highly valuable and transferable company. Follow the Exit Planning Institute on LinkedIn and visit earnsepa.com to learn more about the community leading the exit planning profession.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Exit Is Now podcast. So I was telling you that we do a lot of generational stuff because we're trying to figure out how business owners take in exit planning and exit strategy, right? Where, and we talk in our business about the business, personal, financial goals. Typically, boomers are really focused on business. Inventors are the 60-hour work week, right? This is why they probably lack in personal and financial planning. If you look at the 40 years olds, I said earlier on the show that I think they kind of really lean into exit planning to blend and balance life. They like using technology. They value their time. Work smarter, not harder. Millennials, I think, are like earn to spenders. So like framing up.
Experience spenders for sure.
Yeah, that's totally me, right? But now what we're seeing is that the Gen Z and the Alpha generations, I think the oldest Gen Z is, what, 25, 26?
Yeah, something like that.
So they could be starting to own and start and grow companies and sit on executive leadership teams like a lot of my teammates here at EPI. So what can you tell us from your research, if you will, about those generations coming into our workforce?
I think they're very similar to the youngest millennials, right?
Yeah.
Not the older millennials or more Gen Xer.
Yeah, sure,
like,
sure. Yeah.
But they're very similar to the youngest millennials. And I think purpose and meaning is really critical.
Okay.
And they're willing to take a stand.
Yeah.
I also think that they're kind of a little bit exponentially more interested in balance and recharging. Mm. And setting boundaries is much easier for them. I do think also they do have so much technology and information that sometimes the strength and vigor in which they argue their position is even a little bit more over the top and judgmental because it's a very righteous approach. You can even see that going on with politics in the colleges, what's going on with in the Middle East.
Yeah.
People really digging in much deeper.
Yeah.
And so they're much more passionate.
That's very good
observation. Without really maybe being as open to the experience, or maybe I change the word from open to deferential, right? They just feel like they can do anything. And I think technology is really, it gives them access to do that from very young ages. And with branding and with the types of businesses you can do, social media, all those things. And so Gen Z, you know, they're loyal to brands a little bit more. They don't spend as much dough as the millennials, actually, because they've grown up in an economy that hasn't been perfect, even though it's been driving with COVID and stuff. So that's been a challenge. So, I mean, they're interesting. They love to travel, love to travel, but not at the same level that millennials like
okay.
too, right?
Yeah.
They don't need their Hermes slippers to,
yeah, yeah.
to hit the town in Mallorca.
Yeah.
Sorry yeah. about that, Zach, and you know who I'm talking about. But they still want to go to Mallorca.
Right.
Do you
yeah,
know
exactly.
what I mean?
I do.
But
I
it
exactly
may just be a little bit one down. I think they really do care about the purpose behind their career. I feel like they're a little bit more anxious than millennials because even in politics and everything, we have a much more, and with COVID, we have a much more anxious world. And so I think that's a real challenge for them. So understanding. And I think it's harder to buy a house. It's harder to get further. And so they, because of social media, they see so many like amazing things out there, and life on the internet looks, or on Instagram, on the gram looks
yeah,
really,
really,
really
cool
for everyone. And it's just not like that. And so they really have a doubt that, are they going to get there? And it really eats away at them. And so it's very hard for them to relax into the here and now, even though, and what's the biggest thing we give them as advice? Relax, you're only 20. Well, you know, when someone's not relaxed, telling them to relax, it doesn't work.
Yeah, anymore. Right. Exactly. Right.
So I think they also want to be coached to some degree more than millennials, and we'll take to that coaching. And I really like that. And, you know, look, our job, if we're anyone in the world, is to be a guide and a mentor and to teach people in every situation.
Yeah.
So just like you talked about the experience last night, whether it's the person serving the food at that place, or whether it's the person at the hotel desk that you're checking in, or whether, you can learn anywhere.
Yeah.
And so I just think we really need to be cognizant of that and try and bring that in. But we also have an onus to teach them. And we suck at that. I'm going to use a technical term there. We suck at that.
We suck at teaching them?
We suck at teaching. Most people are not like you. Most people do not drive a business and have had the change that you've had. And so most people are not as tolerant. Why is that? Because it takes time and it takes money. And those are two things that everyone's short on.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they don't want to do it. But when you do do it, you can espouse to how good it happens. So that's Gen Z. Gen Alpha, I don't friggin' know yet.
Yeah,
I mean,
too young.
Too young to really see. And I just think, you know, what's happening is emphasis on all those things, on anxiety more, on the use of technology, right? We know what the AI now.
Yeah.
So the drivers, and AI is going to change the world in so many different ways, from the way you do homework, right, to the way you learn.
Yeah.
And so, of course we're going to thrive and survive. We got to communicate and talk about it. So I don't know. I couldn't answer the questions about Gen Alphas. That there's more information about how their buying habits than their leadership habits or their learning habits.
Yeah.
And they've been out, right? Because they took 2 years out, many of them, from going to school, which really hurt them.
Yes,
really
I agree.
Yeah.
I think that you could even see some of the struggles in the high school I teach at our entrepreneurship program too.
I love that.
And like those kids, like learning remotely was tough. And I don't know if I could have done it that way at such a young age.
I could do it. I mean, I would.
Like you're learning how to read
a
in the first grade.
Of Ritalin. Right? Like, come on, bro.
Yeah.
You got all that other stuff to focus on.
It's like you're learning to read in the first grade virtual. Like it just doesn't. I don't know how it works.
I just think, you know, as far as businesses and figuring out how businesses thrive and survive and provide value to their customers, it's really about really doubling down on understanding your audience and what they need from you. And look what you guys have done.
Yeah.
Your clients needed chapters. They needed a place to collaborate together and share leads, but provide value in different ways from different types of people and to learn together. And so look at how much that's taken off to push and drive the other value provision that they want to give to the rest of the world.
Right.
And so we just got to be cognizant that we are in the people business and people matter.
People matter.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, I appreciate you hanging out with us, coming in for all the way from California to Cleveland, Cleveland, Ohio.
Really
again,
fun.
You'll see Dan in April at the Exit Planning Summit in Marco Island. Really appreciate
And we're
going to
do something fun there. I think we're going to do something brave and different.
You are a brave and different guy, right? You're a brave and different guy. And I think that it's going to be not only just a super like knowledge dump, but also, to your point, like a fun time. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to it, man.
Yeah, me
hopefully
too.
You hang out a little bit.
I'm going to. Yeah,
as
yeah.
Well,
I'm bringing my wife. She's from Florida.
Oh,
yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Great, man.
Yeah.
That's going to be
For
fun.
Sure.
Well, thanks, brother. I appreciate you coming out. And everybody, next show is March 13th. So subscribe, listen, and leave a review on all the podcast platforms. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.